Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to U-Talk, part of the Torn by Sports and Blog Talk Radio Network. Providing unbiased opinions on all things U-Talk football and basketball.
All right, welcome to U-Talk. This Wednesday edition, I've got Joseph on the line with me. This is Grant. I will admit, we decided to go to the mother-in-law's for Thanksgiving, and she has a cat, my ultimate nemesis. So if I sound a little under the weather, it's thanks to the great cat allergies. So we'll see how this goes ultimately. But just to give you a heads up, you know, Joseph and I are going to look at what in the world is going on with the youth offense, talk a little bit about that, and then we'll get ready for the Rumble of the Rockies and talk about hangovers and, you know, see what we expect to see this coming Saturday. And, you know, to get started, Joseph, how about quick takeaway from this last Saturday's game?
Oh, gosh. I mean, I think my emotional reaction is the same as everybody else's. I guess what I try to do when I'm looking at these things is make sure that we're not telling a story necessarily there. I mean, maybe the Utes have just happened to lose a couple of games late and there isn't some kind of systematic problem causing them to collapse, but it sure seems that way. I would say this is the third opportunity where we've known that the Utes could play into a championship game, and they've been against an opponent they really ought to be able to beat, and they just, and I don't even want to say haven't shown up, because the numbers that I look at for the team actually aren't that bad, but they sure didn't score any points, so like, it's hard to win a game when you score so few points.
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy, and it's an unfortunate trend we're seeing with the Utes since joining the Pac-12. I mean, they've had multiple opportunities when they've been in control of their own destiny or even had some people help them out in the past, and yet they enjoy me being a devastated crushed fan. I guess for some reason they just can't seem to finish it. It's almost like they get to their closer, to use some pitching terminology, they get to the closer and the closer gives up three runs in the game. It just seems like that happens every time in the bottom of the ninth for this youth program, and it's frustrating. Now, you know, I know Andy and Patrick really went into the game a little bit more, and I don't want to spend a ton of time on the game itself, but I am curious to hear your thoughts, and I'll give mine on, you know, if you had to pin the loss on one thing, whether it be the offense or the defense or anything specific, what would you pin that Oregon loss on?
I mean, I think the answer for me is turnovers. And I kind of hate that answer because it's always the easy answer, but this was a very unusual game in that regard. I mean, the Utes actually put up good yards per play. They put up almost 7 yards per play, about half a yard per play more than Oregon usually allows. So they scored. They did better than average in terms of how you want to measure the defense, the offense moving forward. But they had those two critical turnovers, and I count a fourth down stop as a turnover. Those two critical turnovers. There was a fourth and two from the red zone, and then there was the fumble on the 15 where Troy Williams would be a little fast and loose with the football. And then I tell you the thing that I see when I close my eyes at night with the Cal game, I close my eyes and I'd see Zach Moss stretching out his hand, holding the ball, and falling about 6 inches short of that goal line. But with this one, was it Reggie who dropped that pick six?
No, that was Justin Thomas.
J- Justin Thomas, and that's what I see. I see a bouncing within his lap, and there's no reason that he's got to come down with that ball 99 times out of 100. You know, and this just happened to be that one time. And that, for me, that's where the ball game was. And I certainly hear everybody's frustrations with the offense. And I watched the same three and outs there at the end that were incredibly frustrating. But on the whole, they moved the ball pretty well. They just had the worst possible timing for the bad plays, and the good plays didn't do enough because of the turnovers and the failures on fourth down. And it was just so frustrating, and doubly frustrating for me because I don't think they played that badly. I don't think that it was, you know, one of these sleepwalk games like, you know, Washington State was a few years ago where they were just terrible. I think they showed up and just didn't make the plays when they needed to. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, it's so I've heard people complain about the defense, and I'm sorry, in this league, you know, the offenses are going to score.
They held. I mean, Oregon's a good offense, and they held them down pretty well. But
exactly.
The offense is clearly the problem.
Yeah, I'm not going to pin this on defense. And even Justin Thomas, I mean, yeah, he drops that potential pick six, but you know what? That happens. I mean, I'm not worried about that. I will say, clearly missed tackles are a problem, and the media interviews that the defense has given since then, they all are openly in admitting that. I will say this, thank heavens Marcus Williams is back and playing with this team, because it seemed like he finished every tackle that someone missed.
Every other play they needed him, or it would have gone for a ton more yards.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm not blaming this on the defense, but how does an offense score, a Utah offense that has put up as many as, I believe, what, 52 points was the high this season, only be able to put up 21 points on this Oregon defense? I mean, this is the Oregon defense that I believe is solidly ranked 11th in every defensive category across the Pac-12. And then
they look national. There, let me pull it up. Their ESPN defensive efficiency. This is after playing the Utes. I've got to scroll all the way to the bottom here.
I really have a feeling that this is just going to make me angrier.
104. So they went up quite a bit since last week. They were 123rd, I think, last week.
I mean,
four or five teams, Texas State, UL Monroe, Rice. That's the kind of defense that we're talking about here. It's not just bad. It's beyond bad.
Yeah, and so here's my problem. This is, and please correct me if I'm wrong. This is Aaron Roderick's second shot at being the play caller in a co-offensive coordinator situation, if I remember right. He's getting to do this again. So you would think he would have learned. But yet, here's my problem. The offense is inconsistent, and every season, the last two seasons, like, it just seems like in Whittingham's post-game press conferences or the Monday press conference, he has to say, well, the play calling this or the play calling that, we'll have to do that better. Like, I'm sorry, how many learning opportunities is Aaron Roderick going to get as a play caller? Like, it just doesn't seem – it's just not working out. And I hate seeing people lose jobs even when they're making six-figure salaries and whatnot. So, like, I it's hard for me to pitch now as I think a little bit more rationally than I did Saturday to say he should be fired. But it's hard to say he should be making the play calls even starting on Saturday, but let alone next season. And I will also say this, and I mean, Utah fans, I feel like, you know, your coverage, the media coverage is at a height right now for Utah fans. You've got multiple podcasts covering the Utes, and one of those being the Utah Man podcast, and they were talking about how we need an actual QB coach, and I could not agree more. I mean, let's get a quarterback coach that's actually played quarterback who can speak from experience and teach these kids how to play quarterback. Last time I checked, there's this quarterback guy who played for the U named Scott Mitchell. That, you know, maybe he might be interested in coming and being
a
quarterback.
He's hanging around in town, I think, hoping to get that job offer. I'm not sure what his plans are, but, yeah, he seems available, that's for sure.
Exactly. I mean, I'm kind of done with this experiment. I'm sorry. I'm sorry, A-Rod. I like you. I'm glad you've been with the youths and with Whittingham so long, but I'm done with you getting to learn all the play calling. I'm just sick of Whittingham having to admit the play calling was a problem in the post game. And just when your offense is only putting up 21 on a defense that is probably on average giving up 40 to 50 points a game,
that is
ridiculous. And then add on to the fact that Cal is just as bad as a defense, and how many points do we put up on them? I don't have it straight. Hold on. You know what? I do have it right in front of me. Let me just bring on the pain. 23 points in a loss to Cal. I mean, I can't handle it anymore. I don't see how he keeps his job play caller.
And I think the thing that you have to do, and you have to make sure that you do, is that you look at the whole body of work. And I don't dispute at all. I'm not an idiot. I was watching the game. I don't dispute at all that was a terrible, terrible performance on Saturday, and that it was a terrible performance against Cal, although I kind of want to remind everybody that everybody was injured in that game. That was a rough one. Was that the one where Dielman went down early, too, and we were still adjusting to the new centers and things? But this game, there was no excuses. There's absolutely no reason for this. But still, when you're evaluating, you want to look at the whole season. I mean, those two games against the two worst defenses Utah played were terrible. But they also played, again, I use ESPN efficiency numbers because they're decent. They played three top 15 defenses this season. That's Washington, UCLA, and USC. And in those three games, they put up 100 points. That's 33 points a game. And as I recall, those were either mostly or all on offense. They have the ability to play really, really well and to call right plays, too. And I, watching the Oregon game, I never felt like the play calling was terrible. It just never happened. The thing that's supposed to happen against that team just never did, which is, you know, big, big, huge, gashing plays. And we get the basic stuff, we get 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 yards of play, but we never blew the doors open in the way that you're supposed to be able to do against that team. And I can't put an explanation on that except to say that maybe Oregon just put together their best defensive game of the season. They sure have a heck of a lot of great athletes on there, and maybe they were so ticked about last year that they actually tried this time, because watching them play in other games, there's a distinct lack of effort, and I didn't see that this time. I saw an Oregon team that really, really wanted to come away with that win and play defense as best they could. But I'm baffled because, unlike other losses, I don't feel like I can point to something. I feel like the offense actually played pretty well. You get 7 yards of play, you expect to come away with 35, 42 points, somewhere in that range.
Well, even then, I mean, the other thing that really bugs me about this offense is it just seems like the team goes away from things for way too long. I mean, like Corey Butler-Byrd takes a reverse to the house, and I can't recall how many times. I feel like that was his only play. Like, how many other times did he get a chance to touch the ball How often are we going to have, you know, swing? Like, it bothers me that, you know, let's say CBB, they just bottled him up for the rest of the game. Like, obviously, if they're focusing their defense on shutting him down, there's got to be other stuff that can allow us to move the ball and score some touchdowns. Also,
they were stacking the box. They had about eight guys in the box. They were all about Joe Williams. And as a result, Troy Williams had a pretty darn good game. I mean, he picked up, I think he threw 67%, and about 7-8 yards per pass. He had a good game. He just didn't connect. I think there were two deep balls down the sideline, passes that he usually makes that he just didn't make this time. And then the one time he does make it is when we kind of wish he wouldn't have. I think if we'd run the ball another three times and run another minute and a half off the clock, we'd have won that game.
Here's my other problem. I love myself a good play action pass, especially the tight ends. But for some reason, fourth and goal, it's like I feel like A-Rod flips his playbook to the fourth and short playbook, and that page of the playbook only has one play on it. Like, how did they think? Like it's funny, you know, they were crushing it earlier in the year with fourth and short, and just crushing it, running the same play over and over and over again. Like, isn't it pretty naive to think that play is going to continue to work? Like, you got to mix it up some. Otherwise, you become so predictable. You just send a blitz straight to that gap and just kill that play. Like, and that's pretty much what happened on their fourth day. When they should have, and I haven't heard Whittingham admit that he probably should have done this, but he should have kicked the field goal and taken his 3 points. But, I mean, obviously, hindsight's 20/20.
I think going for it on fourth and two with the mismatch. Utah's got one of the best O-lines in the country, and they played really well this game, and they were dominating. And so I don't think it was unreasonable to expect them to do it. But you do need to have the possibility of something else, and they haven't worked to develop that possibility. So when you look at them on film, you know what they're going to do, and they haven't shown you anything else, and they didn't show anything else. The other thing I wanted to see this game, and I still haven't seen, I thought this game was perfect for it, given the lack of discipline that Oregon displayed and their poor special teams play overall, is a fake punt. But we've got a 4-5 linebacker kicking the ball back there. It looks like a Greek god. let him run the ball for a few seconds and see what happens. I don't know why that play wasn't dialed up when it was clear. I mean, the last couple of drives were down back to our own 20, but it was clear to anybody watching that game that the Utes needed to do something to get out of this kind of stilted, painful rhythm that wasn't going to allow for anything special to happen, the kind of things that needed to happen to have the result that we expected in that game.
Yeah. Well, we'll see what happens. I have clearly expressed my distaste for what is going on. But let's move on to finally our actual rivalry game, the Rumble in the Rockies is this week. So what do you got? What do you think? Or what stats do you have on this game to give us some insight into what's going to happen?
Colorado is just not messing around. They are a really, really good team. If you go overall efficiency, they are a top 10 team. So if you kind of compare yards per play against the yards per play allowed of other teams, they had Michigan on the ropes, and then Sefolufau was injured. The only game that they've lost was sort of legitimately lost was to USC. And that was close. They're really, really good, and I'm not sure exactly how they got there so fast. But I think a big part of it is that they're really healthy, and they've been healthy all year long, so they've had the opportunity to gel. It feels like a game the Utes are going to win just because that would be so frustrating. If the Utes do beat Colorado, they will have beaten every single team in the Pac-12 South, but still lost the Pac-12 South, which is baffling to me. But there's no reason really to think they will. They're on the road against a team that's, frankly, by the numbers, the best team Utah's faced this season. I think it'd be fair to say they're playing better football than Washington is.
Yeah, and ultimately, you know, my main concern, I don't have any numbers or anything, but the fact that, you know, listening to the interviews from Tuesday, it just seems, or maybe it was today, I can't remember, but it seems like they're still thinking about this Oregon loss a little too much. Like, I think they're going to lose. They lost that Oregon game, and by end, they will have they lose two games. As a matter of fact, I will predict right now that what's going to happen is we're going to see one of the ugliest first halves. We've seen some ugly first halves because this team just gets the slow starts. We're going to see the ugliest first half we've seen all season from the Utes.
Yeah,
I think they bounce back a little bit in the second half, but I don't think I've heard a lot of predictions of a 3-point game. I think this is going to be a 14-point-plus game in favor of Colorado at this point.
I mean, that's the sensible pick. I think there are other stories you can tell if you want, but certainly if you just look at the players on the field and how they played to date, that's absolutely true. The one thing I come back to is I feel like this Utes team at their best is better than everybody but USC at their best. And the hope is that they can figure out how to play that way when they need to. Or I mean, they should have played that way last week to play that way when they needed to. But you know, there's a lot on the line certainly this week. If they come away with a W here, they've got a really good shot at some, you know, really nice ball positioning. That's important stuff. But I'm with you. I'm certainly not ready to predict a Utes win. I can't justify that prediction with anything I look at either on film or on paper.
Okay. Well, how about let's get straight to it. I mean, unless you have something else you want to share about the Colorado game, let's get straight to the picks and what do you got?
I think it's going to be a surprisingly low-scoring game. I do think Utah is probably going to beat the spread. I think the offense is going to be stifled by a really good Colorado defense, and Utah's D is going to come to play, get their turnover mojo back, and keep it close. But I think it's going to be Colorado 17, Utah 10 at the end of the day.
Okay. Well, I'm going to go with I think the hangover is going to cause some serious problems in the first half. I think Colorado is going to come out early and hurt, put the hurt on, and then not score much in the second half. I think it's going to be a score, you know, I'm going to go 28-16 Colorado. Completely disagree. If you want to put the Utes are not going to be beating the spread this weekend. I think it's going to be a pretty rough end to the season, and
certainly what we've seen in years past would support that. If this whole end of season collapse is a real thing, and they didn't just happen to lose a couple of games late, sort of by accident or part of the random nature of things, yeah, I think it's going to be pretty ugly. And if it is, and we start to build up this evidence that there's something going on that's causing this team to really flag late, even with a nice late bye week and some easy opponents. We have to think about how we're handling, you know, spring and fall camp, how we're handling practices, if maybe we're not working these guys a little bit too hard.
Yeah. No, look, you know, I love the respect the process slogan, but when you see consistent results in the month of November, there's clearly something that needs to be tweaked in that process. You know, I don't want to go on too much. My favorite definition in this world is Einstein's definition of insanity, which is doing the same thing and expecting different results.
Uh-huh.
And Whittingham, I trust, is doing the same thing week in, week out, and it leads to the right result. Most of the time, but for some reason come November, that process is, there's some kind of problem. And hopefully hopefully, after this season, there could be some, some thought put into it, maybe look at something or what they could possibly tweak, and maybe they tweak something and try again next year. But, it's a real shame. It's a shame to see in the 11th game of the season for, in essence, the season to end. I mean, to have all your goals.
When you've been in the Rose Bowl hunt right up until that very moment, that really sucks. I mean, I guess the bright silver lining I would try and kind of throw on the whole thing is if Utah plays this well every single year, if we get this exact team, where the offense is frustrating sometimes, the defense is almost always good, we're turning the ball over, getting a lot of sacks, this team, they're going to win the Pac-12 South, and they're going to win the Pac-12, and they're going to do it about once every 10 years. But what's frustrating is you can feel how close the Utes are to being Stanford or USC or Washington or being really great. And it's just a couple of little tweaks and fine-tuning that are needed. And I don't know what those are. I'm not an expert. But they're so close. And they're right on the cusp of being – truly dominant instead of just contenders, and that's what's so frustrating.
Yeah. All right, well, we will see what happens Saturday. I hope we're both wrong personally, and but ultimately we'll see. Any last words, Joseph?
No, just go Utes.
All right, go Utes.
Thanks for listening to You Talk, brought to you by the Torn by Sports and Blog Talk Radio Networks. Find us on Twitter @You Talk Podcast or email @utalk@gmail.com.